Good morning. The time is 8 o'clock. You're listening to KVNF Mountain Grown Community Radio. This is regional news for the Western Slope. I'm Travis Bubenik. Slow and blowing snow possible on the roads this morning across the KVNF listening area as a storm with Arctic origins continues to blow through. Slick conditions and slow-moving traffic reported on McClure Pass near the North Fork Valley. Much of I-70 in western Colorado also reporting icy snow-packed conditions. You can find detailed information on road conditions from the state of Colorado at cotrip.org. More coal miners in the North Fork Valley are being laid off. Oxbow Mining Company, owned by billionaire Bill Koch, laid off more than 100 mine employees on Monday at its Elk Creek mine. It makes for a tough start to the holiday season for the North Fork Valley and neighboring communities, and it's part of a powerful domino effect after fires at the mine earlier this year disrupted production. Aspen Public Radio's Elise Thatcher has more.
Oxbow says it's idling the mine or stopping mining for coal, but keeping everything else ready for reopening at some point. And it's all because the company hasn't been able to get a gigantic piece of equipment called a longwall miner, which can cost in the $100 million range. Brad Goldstein is with Oxbow Corporation.
It's taking a lot longer than we anticipated.
The mine is all but closing less than 2 years after Oxbow was granted permission to expand the Elk Creek mine operations. Oxbow had the right equipment before, but was forced to seal it off underground this fall. That's because conditions were too dangerous for workers to run the equipment. More than 100 employees were laid off then, too. Brad Goldstein says it could be anywhere from 6 months to a year and a half before Oxbow can line up replacement machinery and start up again. He says the company believes it's worth the effort.
The climate for coal in Asia and Europe is strong. Japan is looking to acquire coal since they've gone off nuclear, and the same thing for Europe. So we believe there's a market there and that that market will continue to grow.
That echoes what a coal analyst told Aspen Public Radio in October. Andrew Moore is an editor at the energy news service Platts.
The long view actually is bullish, both for domestic coal consumption and for overseas coal consumption.
Officials in communities near the mine say the layoffs can have a big effect.
I'm Doug Ashley, I'm a Delta County Commissioner. The coal mining jobs are wage incomes in Delta County that literally can't be replaced based on the other industries that we have.
Mining incomes are generally about $70,000 a year or more. When the mine announced the earlier layoffs this fall, some workers took to a community Facebook page searching for jobs. Some have posted they found work,
which probably will necessitate a move, which puts pressure on the real estate market. It's a ripple effect, so we're very concerned about that.
Manager said during the previous layoffs they hope to reverse that trend. Mike Ludlow is executive vice president of Oxbow's mining operations.
Optimistically, I'd like to think that some of the employees that have been laid off would have opportunities coming back in the near future.
That's unlikely now as Oxbow lays off most of the remaining employees at Elk Creek Mine, and the company still doesn't have the equipment it needs to mine as usual. About 20 workers are still employed there, a small fraction of the previous workforce. Elise Thatcher, Aspen Public Radio News.
And that report comes to us from Rocky Mountain Community Radio, a collaboration of community and public radio stations across the state. For the past few months, KVNF's programming director Allie Lightfoot has been helping local kids produce radio stories as a part of our youth reporting project, Pass the Mic. The project is now in its second year and is a collaboration of KVNF and the North Fork Heart and Soul Project. The stories these kids produce tackle a number of contentious issues, one of them being the energy industry.
What made you want to work at the coal mine?
I was born and raised around coal mining. My grandfather, my father, and my older brother is a coal miner as well. It's in my blood.
11-year-old reporter Christina Rankin is talking to an underground coal miner at the Bowie Mine in Somerset, Colorado. She's covering local energy issues for Pass the Mic, a youth reporting project here at KVNF. And like many people here, she's got a stake in the game, too.
Your stepfather works at a coal mine, so without his job around the North Fork Valley, is that a concern of yours?
Well, yeah, because I think that if Jim doesn't have a job, well, then there won't be dinner on the table or anything or a roof over my head. I just feel that his job is important.
Coal mining is huge to this small mountain valley. Around 500 people work in the mines, many of them for generations. The mines have struggled in the past few years. One mine laid off half its crew after fires started underground. The mine's problems come amid larger challenges for the industry as a whole. Competition from natural gas, warmer weather, and the economic downturn have cut demand for coal-generated electricity. And new rules for coal-fired power plants from the Obama administration have raised hackles. Some local miners feel the industry is under attack.
Mr. Obama's war on coal is very disruptive to the coal industry. Put a lot of miners out of work.
One of Christina's colleagues is 12-year-old energy reporter Eden Clearwater. He's been living off the grid since he was 2 years old. And like Christina, energy is a hot topic at home. But in Eden's case, he's a proponent of renewable energy.
I was just raised that way. We weren't really into coal energy that much. I think it has a lot of light pollution and air pollution. And I really want to learn about like how these people actually like the coal mines, because I can't get my head around it.
Like most youth reporters, Eden and Christina's questions are blunt and simple, the kind of questions we're sometimes afraid to ask as adults.
If there were no coal mines in the world, what has like your dream job been?
You know, I started mining when I was 18 years old. I enjoy what I do. I'm challenged every day. It makes me think. It keeps me sharp. I get to help people. Some of the best people in the world work in mines. Very smart guys, very hardworking guys.
With the future of energy and the local economy at stake, these kids are paying attention to energy issues. They don't have all the answers yet, but asking why are you a miner is a great place to start. Because it gets at why people often disagree about energy. For some, it's not just a job. It's a family tradition and a way of life.
That was KVNF's Allie Lightfoot. This Saturday, December 7th at the Paradise Theater, KVNF is screening a series of documentary films on the Pass the Mic project, featuring the full-length interviews our youth reporters conducted themselves. The event is free and open to the public and kicks off at 3 p.m. I recently spoke to Allie about the project and what she's learned from working with youth reporters. So, Allie, when people think of radio, they don't necessarily think of it as something that young kids get excited about. So what's been your experience with these kids throughout the project? Were they interested in radio at the beginning, and did that change as time went on?
Yeah, and they're not interested in it in the way that you might think. I mean, when they first come in, they're excited just about like speaking into a microphone and hearing their own voice come back to them in the earphones and,
right,
you know, making weird noises and, you know, playing with the cords and jumping around the studio.
Pressing buttons.
Yeah, pressing buttons is really exciting. But as the project goes on, I think that they get excited about the material that they're actually putting out there and the discoveries that they're making in the community with this project anyway. They start out kind of going into the interviews unprepared, not really ready for an interview. And then by the end of it, they've completely researched it. They have great questions lined up and they're serious about it.
These kids are getting pretty hands-on experience in radio production, you know, that most of us don't have the chance to get until much later, if at all. So to you, what's the value there? And have these kids seemed generally interested in learning these skills?
Yeah, they do. And they're naturally good at them, too. They pick them up a lot faster than adults do, generally. They don't seem like they're paying any attention when you're teaching them these things. And you think, are they absorbing any of this? But the next time that you put them on the mic, they know what they're doing. So that's pretty remarkable.
You and I have talked before about how sometimes these kids are frankly just better reporters than adults. So what do you think makes these kids' interviews so intriguing?
I think that they ask the questions that most adults are wondering but afraid to ask. I think that when people are describing something like, for instance, how solar panels work, how solar thermal energy actually works, you know, these kids will get the person they're talking to explain it like they're talking to a child, which most people really, that's about where their knowledge is at the same level as as a child.
Right.
So when you get someone to break it down for you and even talk about more of the emotional aspects of an issue, you know, like kids will come right out and say, why do you like this? Why is this important to you? What makes this hard? What makes this sad? Why are you scared?
Mm-hmm.
They tend to go for the emotional content of the situation that they're exploring. I think more people can relate to that. All of a sudden, there's a real human element that might be missing from the way that adults like to talk to each other.
So I hate to put you on the spot, and you don't have to answer this question if you don't want to, of course, but what's been your favorite moment so far working on this project? And not necessarily, you know, a clip from an interview that one of the kids did, but just your a favorite moment that stood out to you.
I think this year the energy reports, it wasn't my favorite necessarily, but it was the most surprising to me because you had two kids. One of them was a proponent of alternative energy. That's Eden Clearwater, who's been living off the grid most of his life. And then we had Christina Rankin, who was also an energy reporter whose father is a coal miner. And both of them went to these interviews with completely open minds and made real discoveries. It surprised me how well they really understood those issues from the point of view that I wish a lot of adults would look at it and be a little bit more attuned to the fact that there's real people involved in those industries, real families.
KVNF's programming director, Allie Lightfoot, the force behind our Pass the Mic Youth Reporting Project. Thanks for joining me, Allie.
You're welcome. Thank you, Travis.
More information on this Saturday's Pass the Mic documentary screening can be found at kvnf.org. Several feet of snow is possible in the Central Mountain region throughout today and into tomorrow, although slightly lesser amounts are expected for the KVNF listening area. There's a winter storm warning in effect for most of the region and an avalanche warning for the San Juans and San Miguel Mountains. We could see 4 to 7 inches in the northern San Juans and about 1 to 3 in the area around the North Fork Valley, possibly 2 to 4 inches in some valley locations. According to the National Weather Service, the low pressure system bringing the storm through originated in the Arctic region and will likely make temperatures drop about 20 degrees across western Colorado. The Weather Service also says this particular storm could have an impact on temperatures for the remainder of the winter, and that the snow from this storm could even have longer-lasting impacts, possibly affecting weather and water conditions going into next summer. Jim Pringle with the National Weather Service Forecasting Office in Grand Junction says while the storm may not have major immediate impacts, it could help predict how snowpack levels will look for next year.
The moisture content should be sufficient to have very important input into our overall season snowpack that we'll be looking at by next spring.
Pringle says long rain outlooks right now are predicting above normal rain and snow to the north and below normal precipitation to the south. He says even a slight shift in where the seasonal jet stream sets up could affect whether we see more rain and snow or less.
That jet stream pattern where that is prevalent during the winter months will determine what we get here in western Colorado, whether we get precipitation that's above normal or below normal for the season or near normal for that matter.
If the jet stream does set up for more rain and snow through the next few months, that could bode well for the watershed.
You know, if we continue like this with these type of storms of this intensity through the winter into the spring, then yeah, we will have a significant amount of water in our mountains to deal with our needs through the next summer period.
But Pringle says despite the forecast for a wetter winter, there's still the chance that things could be about the same this year. And he says that's not necessarily a bad thing.
There's equal chance that we could have near normal precipitation, which would be okay. Near normal, I mean, that should meet our needs for the water year, but it'd be nice to have just a little bit above normal.
Even if this storm doesn't lead to a significantly wetter winter or a fuller than usual snowpack, there's still the chance that a wet spring could help out our water resources.
Our good start of the season this fall has been wet, and if we get a wet spring, it may not be all of that problematic if we don't get a lot of snow, say, in the January-February time frame.
That was Jim Pringle with the National Weather Service Forecasting Office in Grand Junction. KVNF's Brian Cambria contributed reporting for that story. Colorado has indeed had a decently wet start to the winter this year. Much of the state is still suffering from drought, however. As the Denver Post reports, the U.S. Drought Monitor says three-quarters of the state is currently in some form of drought, with particularly bad conditions in the Arkansas Valley. However, after recent flooding along the Front Range, the South Platte and North Platte basins are currently listed as drought-free. Taryn Finnessy of the Colorado Water Conservation Board told the Pueblo Chieftain Colorado's storage levels are doing better than they were this time last year, which could take some of the heat off of municipal water providers. And according to the Post, reservoirs across the state are at about 83% of their average levels. That's up from 66% this time last year. You're listening to KVNF Mountain Grown Community Radio. Stay tuned for the Wednesday morning music mix. For KVNF News, I'm Travis Bubinick.